Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
South Connection podcast fans, JT here, ready for the most extreme menage a trois violence you'll ever experience, and this is the Extreme Three-Way Dance. Joining me, as always, are my partners in this mysterious tryst, Johnny and Jenny. How are you guys doing?
Feeling like a Philadelphia floozy. How about you?
Oh, I'm good. John, how are you?
Lovely. Good to get back up with you all.
Yes, of course, and we are recording this on Memorial Day, so as always, we send our thoughts and prayers out to those who've paid the ultimate sacrifice so we can sit around and gorge on cookies and pork, so of course, take a moment to remember all those before us who did this, so we could do this. All right, we got a busy night ahead of us, guys. We have three episodes of ECW TV and a special event, and the reason we're doing this many jammed into one episode is a lot of these installments of ECW television for us are becoming a lot less new material. The fact that the network has a lot of the big shows that we're watching, the monthly arena shows, the TV then usually just recaps those shows and reshows matches, and we're not going to break them down again. So these three episodes of TV really just kind of recap what we did in our last episode with Double Tables. So what we're going to do is we're just going to touch on whatever net new content there is across these 3 weeks of TV. And then we will go ahead and get into our big show of the night. So if you're new here, welcome. We are going through the history of ECW TV weekly, starting in February of 94. We're officially just about a month in. I think Night the Line was crossed was early February, so a year in, I should say. So I think we're about a year into our journey. And I guess we can take just a quick moment. John, like, what's any big takeaways or anything stand out when you think back of the evolution of ECW over the past year that we've been watching?
How they morph from funk to and now we're in like the Cactus era, just the emergence of people like Cactus and who are kind of lost their way in other federations and really just found their groove here, like Cactus and Shane, which you know, some of us think found this groove, some of us others.
Yeah.
That's what I really like. This is like a home for misfits that get a chance to shine, kind of like to be that big fish in a small pond, and some really to take advantage and knock it out the park.
What do you think, Jenny?
I think one of the things that stands out for me is like the whole production, like learning how to be like a promotion, learning how to like do the TV shows and put on the events and get the people there and the whole kind of like behind the scenes aspect of it and how it comes across on TV and how we've watched their audience grow and become more and more rabid.
Yeah. I think the loyalty of the fan base is one of the biggest things. How diehard they become loyal to the promotion. Like they love some of the guys and hate some of the guys, but at the end of the day, they're there for ECW. They're part of the show, part of the event, part of the atmosphere. It's the same people pretty much. They're there and they're part of the ambiance of what makes ECW ECW. And what sticks out to me is the depth of the roster. We talk about it a lot, but think back to those early February 94 shows, like some of the guys we had, like Sal Bellomo and, you know, other dudes that would come and go. that would constitute pushes, like angles. And you could tell that they really moved from being a regional indie to a territory or a regional territory to one with like a lot of buzz that people would go to get resurrected and get noticed and have a second career rebirth. And we've really settled in now to this period of like this card, like whether you like these shows or not, you can't deny the level of talent they're working through here is like insane for this time period. Like these are all guys mostly that were stars or would go on to be stars. Very few dudes are just like hanging around here on the tail end of their career or we're never going to go anywhere. Like some of the guys we saw a year ago. So I think the overall depth has become really impressive really quickly in ECW. And I feel like it started in the fall around when they became Extreme Championship Wrestling is when things really picked up. You know, when Scorpio mm-hmm. came in and really started getting mm-hmm. pushed and Ron Simmons, and then you got Benoit Malenko. And from there, Cactus Jack became a regular. So when that all really came to fruition is where things started to pick up greatly. All right. So we're going to start with a very brief chat around the February 7th, 1995 episode of Hardcore Television. We get clips of Public Enemy entering the ring. We get our opening animation and then the full opening segment for Double Tables, including the introduction of the new Jason. We get the full Hack Myers and Young Dragons versus the Pitbulls and Jason match. Then we get the full Al Snow versus Chris Benoit match, as well as highlights of Sabu and Taz versus Public Enemy. And we close out with a promo from Chris Benoit, who talked about sending Sabu to the hospital twice, but he's back in the ring. People are saying he's tough and the Crippler couldn't get the job done. The only reason Sabu is here is because Benoit let him come back. He could take him out permanently at any moment. The day will come where Sabu and Taz will learn what pain and humility are all about. He and Malenko will be the new champions. And this is, of course, Johnny, if you remember this one, the famous kind of hand-wringing promo. It'll become a tick of his going forward. But I remember... I think it's either on the Benoit DVD or the ECW DVD where Paul E. talks about having Benoit focus his energy like toward his hands to keep him steady during the promos and give like a visual, and this becomes kind of his thing here.
Yeah, and it's also to take like the attention away that he's not the best guy on the stick, so it gives him like a gimmick to get through these the interviews, and that's what everybody's gonna be focused on. Because his promo skills are less than average.
You mean you don't enjoy that accent saying a boat? I mean, it was a good promo, but like you said, I found the hand wringing to be quite distracting.
Well, there you go. Especially... See, they distracted you from his talking.
Well, I was still listening
used to it.
To
get used to it. That's all we gotta say.
Also distracted by that jean jacket or vest or whatever the shit.
It's a Canadian tuxedo. What do you expect him to wear?
Oh, come on.
It's Canadian. I'm sure he had dungarees under that for pants. Sure.
We got to be careful now. You have Canadian business partners, so that's we have to watch what we say.
He would agree. anything else stand out? Anything you want to mention on this episode, or we can shuttle ahead?
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, let's go to Valentine's Day, 2/14.
But the one thing I don't want to do is undersell. Like, we're blown through that episode because it didn't mean much to us. But if you weren't in the monthly arena show and that's all you're seeing, like, that's a great episode of TV. You're getting all of Benoit, Al Snow, which was an awesome match.
Yeah, the double tables, sure.
Yeah, you get all that stuff that we talked about last week. So, I mean, that's still, like, a great episode of television. We're just not really covering it because we don't need to. But I just don't want a short change to make it like it was, like, a wasted week or anyone who isn't watching the big shows. It's still a worthwhile something to watch there.
Mm-hmm. And also at the time, this is kind of like the last days of the where they're cranking out the VHS tapes. That was still a big part of their business. So mm-hmm. they're trying to pump up, people buy double tables.
Yep. All right. Valentine's Day, you mentioned, Johnny, 1995. Let's head there. I'm sure woke up that morning and probably had some candy and a card from my mom when I came downstairs. She was definitely the mom who gave the Valentine's gift until I don't even know how old I was, but. It's that.
Good. That's what she's supposed to do.
Oh, yeah.
Such an angel.
Always. Always had a Valentine's gift when I woke up. We open with stills of Sabu and Taz versus Public Enemy. Then we get Benoit Malenko's highlight video. We then get another hand-wringing promo from Benoit, who lists down everyone he's supposed to beat him but has failed. It'll end the career of the great Sabu. People say the champs are unbeatable, but he and Dean Malenko disagree. And then we get our opening animation. Any comments on Benoit's promo here? I mean, it's pretty much in line with the last show.
Yeah, the same.
Yeah, nothing else.
All right, Joey's in the nest. Talks up the big February 25th show that's upcoming. We got a big tag team title match there. We get more highlights from Double Tables, which is available on home video, like you said, John. Joey says Rocker rocks in the hospital, but Public Enemy will not go down quietly, and he's sure to hear from them very soon. Joey then brings in Paulie Dangerously and asks when the challengers become the challenged. They will walk in the ring. Think Benoit and Malenko will walk in the ring. They think they can take the belts, but they'll feel like Mark Furman in an NAACP meeting, like Jane Fonda at a Vietnam vet reunion, or like Malcolm X's daughter at a Farrakhan rally. Quite the litany of comparisons there. If they want the titles, they have to freaking take it. And that was, again, quite the flurry. Any notes on Paulie's shit there?
In about 1 minute, he got all three of those references across real quick.
I would like to pay attention here to his sharp black suit that he's wearing. He looks a lot more put together, I think. Mm-hmm. than normal, not showing any taco meat, which is kind of disappointing, but he does look pretty sharp in the suit.
He must have had an important business meeting that day or something. So.
I think he did.
All right, we get Mikey Whipwreck versus Paul Lauria in full from Double Tables. Mm-hmm. And then we get Cactus Jack versus Sandman in full from Double Tables as well. So another big episode. Joey then brings in the Sandman. He says, Jack,
I'm sorry, Justin. Wasn't it a different match, the Cactus Sandman? It looked like it was from, I think it was from Florida, where they had like the turf outside.
You may be right. Maybe it wasn't from Double Tables, Jackson. Yeah, but I think it's one we already saw, right?
Yeah, but it was from Florida because they had the turf outside.
Okay.
Yeah, they had so many. I know that you get confused with all that, but it definitely was. It wasn't the Philly. It was from Florida.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was from January 31st, I think. Maybe the one we already saw. Well, they showed it again on TV. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We saw it.
It was definitely a repeat. I think I watched a little bit and then I confirmed. I kept looking back at my play-by-play from that episode to make sure. All right. Joey brings in Sandman, who says Jack is still iced up for the beating he took. He doesn't care about winning matches. He measures wins by blood, broken bones, and ice packs needed to sleep. Jack gets his revenge by bending chairs, DDTing on the floor, giving a serious brain concussion. But he'll be one of the most famous miscalculations of Jack's career. Woman is drawing the ink for one wrestler of his choosing to face Jack on February 25th as we speak to seek to fill his obligation since he can't wrestle due to the concussion, but he will be at ringside to see their new man due to Jack what he did to Sandman. Sandman doesn't have any ear ringing anymore. His head is clear, but then he calls Joey Todd Pettengill, which is fantastic, playing off that he is brain damaged. I thought that was a fantastic finish to a pretty good promo, Jenny.
It was pretty good. He said, I've had enough of you, Todd Pettengill. It popped me. It was so good. Sandman's so great. I'm still curious about who he's going to bring in to give it to old Cactus.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't believe that all the carnage that we've seen and the million headshots, and all of a sudden they're enforcing the concussion protocol.
He's just had like way too many concussions.
In ECW, like, you need 15 concussions to go into the protocol.
So you get like stamped on.
No spoilers, but we see what happens that it really can't be too strict.
Right.
I think Steve Young would pass this concussion protocol. That's
oh,
God. All right. Joey runs down an upcoming tour, and then we get a recap of Hack Myers destroying Jason's crew at Double Tables. Joey gets in the ring with Paul Lauria, who calls out Hack for laying his hands on Jason and the Virgin Princess Angel, warning him to watch his ass. He says the feud with Mikey's far from over. He also says he's a giant. Not even 911 is a giant compared to him. Of course, right on cue.
Oh, boy.
Out comes 911. He grabs Lauria, but Paul says to let go. Paul then slaps Lauria, and then 911 grabs him, holds him high, spikes him with a choke slam. Of course, the crowd never has enough of this. They chant one more time. 911 obliges. They want one more. Paul fucks around a bit, says two's enough for someone like Lauria and the ECW arena. But he says, and this was interesting, so he says 90 fans have flown in from the computer service. Then we get one more, and that closes us out. And maybe that's why Paul's all decked out. Because it was during this time that they would do like ongoing like conventions, or like they'd bring in fans from out of town for special weekends. And like Smoky Mountain used to do that yearly.
I did not know what that meant.
Yeah, I meant to pull like the exact detail. It might be in the Herb notes when we get to 95. But I'm pretty sure they flew in a bunch of fans. Or they didn't pay for them to come in. But they held. It was like an early version of like a WrestleMania weekend kind of thing. Like a WrestleCon kind of thing.
Okay.
Where they brought fans in. They were in from out of town that they were having Yeah, here we go. So Cyber Slam was the name of the event. It would actually become a regular event, like a pay-per-view.
Cyber Slam?
Yeah, all Cyber right. Slam. So it began in 1995 at Double Tables held in ECW Arena. The event was held for those posting on Usenet's Rec Sport Pro Wrestling, and that is where Herb Coons posts to. Able to meet performers in person, see some live wrestling, ECW's Todd Gordon assisted in organizing this. Prior to the ECW Arena show on February 4th, there was a show held at Flagstaff in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. The red shirts seen on some wrestlers say To the Extreme, when that was a nickname given to the event. In addition to the two shows, there's a Q&A held at the arena with the guest Todd Gordon, the Sandman and Public Enemy. The wrestlers arrived for the show. They came out to mingle and chat. And then they would have another one later in the year as well at the Holiday Inn, Essington, Pennsylvania. So pretty cool. I'd say cutting edge. Because, again, Smoky Mountain was doing it. I don't know the exact timeline if they were doing it around this time. But I think Smoky Mountain was earlier, like 93 or 94. So it definitely was a thing around this time, and the internet was burgeoning. It wasn't, you know, AOL hadn't really taken over yet. I think CompuServe was firing up a bit, but Usenet was big, and there was the big Rec Sport Pro Wrestling, is RSPW, of course, which still lives on today, with us to Scott Keith and others, was really the original gathering of a wrestling community on the internet. So it was cool to see them kind of catering toward that. I think it's pretty neat.
It's still amazing that the crowd hasn't tired of 911. They're still hot for Chokeslam Charlie coming out. He's not dying off at all after his one move. So you can't knock it. It's still working.
Well, to be fair, this is the best thing that 911 has ever done because he threw Loria around the fucking ring. Like, those were probably the biggest chokeslams I've seen him do. Probably just because the giant is a really tiny little man and he's easy to throw around, but he really gets some air on those chokeslams.
Yeah, he was chucking them around.
And then this is the best thing that I've ever seen 911 do.
All right. I enjoyed it. So I did give a couple of awards for this episode because there was more to it versus our last one. I didn't do any of the match awards, but best moment I gave to Sandman for his promo. Most 90s, I gave to Paulie's news references and computer service name drop.
Oh, yeah, definitely. On the Mark Furman is definitely.
Stock Rising, I give it to Benoit and Sandman.
Yeah, I would agree.
And
911.
I was going to add him, but then I'm like, I don't know. He had my best moment, so that's okay.
He still got it.
In Stock Falling, I gave it to Paul Loria and Paulie Dangerous' hair, which is quickly falling
apart.
How
dare you? Why can't he put his ponytail through the back of the hat that he's wearing?
Like under it? Yeah, it's an odd choice.
Yeah, it's very weird.
He does eventually go through the back of the hat. I don't know what took him so long to get there, but... I gave it a great... I gave it a 7 out of 10, like just because of the matches they showed and the promos were great. But again, it's nothing we watched in full. But this is another episode where if you were watching this live and hadn't been in the arena that night, that is an awesome 45 minutes of television.
Oh, yeah. Solid 6.
Yeah. 6.5 for me.
All right. Let's do our final episode of Hardcore TV before we get to our big event. So 221.95. And here we go. So
I'm going to take a nap. All right.
Your second one of the day. One was watching this and one was hearing me talk about it.
Truth.
All right, we open with a segment called The Evolution of a Franchise. Shane Douglas narrates us through his past 18 months. It's time to focus on his career and the future. He arrived in front of a dilapidated bingo hall in August 1993. He was told it is the future of wrestling, thought everyone was out of their minds, and didn't see the way they could put a dent in WWF's empire or Ted Turner's pockets. But then he watched a full show and saw how hard everyone worked and how into it the fans were. And he had to step up his game, take himself back to training and wrestling, not focus on ripping off fake shirts or asking the fans for reaction, because great athletes can earn a reaction. He talks about how the need to be the best in the pool evolve, as Darwin said, and in all sports it has been that way since until Father Time takes your talent. He talks about Muhammad Ali's rope-a-dope, but his athletic skill went, and he had to pass the torch to a greater athlete like Mike Tyson. Same goes for Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky. In wrestling, you could play trivia all the way back, but if you started Bruno Sammartino being the greatest in the WWF and the sport, he was a gladiator, but his ability passed as well. And he gave the torch to guys like Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, but their time's gone now, too. In 1993, he felt it was time to pass them, and now in 95, Flair is not the best on any night. Hulk Hogan's just an entertainer, and if the sport is to survive, he has to do things in ECW like transform the name and the sport. He ripped the mask off Doink to expose a wrestler. He took the torch from Bruno, Steamboat, and Flair. And Flair needs to keep his nose out of wrestling. In 1995, Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan are not the fittest. Douglas is the best. He saw Bruno defend the title countless times, but he was also there for Terry Funk doing in the South while Bruno did up North. Bruno's generation relinquished that torch, but Terry Funk would not because he was too stubborn and tough. He sat on the ECW throne, but what he did, what Douglas quit WWF and WCW for, was get in the way. Douglas knew it was time to push the old guys out. Bruno and Steamboat knew when it was time. When their bodies gave out, Flair only knew thanks to company politics and Hogan shoving a bandana in his mouth. Funk wouldn't retire or give up, so Douglas made the decision for him, told him to step down or get knocked down. He looked him in the eye to say it. Of course, over this, we get clips from that great Night the Line is Crossed press conference that started this whole podcast. Mm-hmm. And after that, it was time to put up or shut up. He proved he could get back what he said in Valley Forge. He had to earn it, but he won. After that, he had to fight through a lingering shoulder injury that eventually needed surgery, but all the time he remained champion, battling through legendary challengers, and we get those highlights from those defenses. He vowed he wouldn't hide behind a billionaire's purse strings, but here comes a dinosaur organization that saw what Shane was doing, saw him as a bandwagon they could ride to greatness. So we had a tournament with great athletes from around the world to determine the athlete, greatest athlete of them all, and Shane was left standing tall. We get clips of the tournament. What happened next has been a topic of a conversation and thoughts ever since August because what Shane did to the NWA title. People ask if he had regrets. He said he took the title that had very little credibility and the dignity that was left in the NWA and added it to the growing legend of ECW, which he then transformed to Extreme to create the legend of the franchise. We get clips of his speech. He proved he was more than a champion and a player, but he's also a franchise capable of hoisting the whole industry on his back, which Bruno, Funk, Hogan, and Flair could not do. He took a dying industry on respirators and took it to the next level. And we're still in the process of resurrecting the sport. He knows he can do it. He's proven it. The industry is back, growing, getting stronger. Neither he nor the fans like what WCW or WWF is doing. It's getting better because of ECW, which it causes excitement in its fans. If it were left to WCW, everyone would be an unemployment line. They deliver an experience like wrestling used to be, hard-hitting and in-your-face. He saw stuff like Doink that he despised. He ripped the mask off and exposed a wrestler under it. He lived the life of a franchise. In 1983, Cactus Jack and him stepped into the ring for the first time, not knowing what was coming. But it was a stepping stone to the UWF, then to the NWA, then to the CWF, then to the NWA, then to the WWF, WCW. In each step, he became better. He was on the verge of greatness in the WWF when his father got sick. When he hit WCW, he became tag team champions, which is possible because Ric Flair wasn't there. As long as Flair is a political force in WCW, Douglas knew he'd never get a fair shake. Everyone in the office, Steamboat, and the Horsemen told Flair that Shane needed the torch. He would be the next great wrestler, but Flair was a coward. He took the pencil, erased his name off the great matches, and relegated him to opening card fights in fiascos with Jim Cornette. Flair should have been teaching him to be champion in matches, and now he answers the question that the sheets, magazines, and Flair himself ask, does Shane really hate Flair as much as he says? That answer is yes. Flair isn't man enough to face him, so here, once and for all, he hates Flair's guts and everything he stands for and has done to the sport. He's made Douglas's job that much harder to get the sport back to thriving and invigorated. Instead, Flair left him a dead horse for resurrection. It's not easy when he sees an entertainer like Hogan shoving handkerchiefs in Flair's face. Flair doesn't have to face him, but every time he hears a bell or watches a match, he'll have to wonder if he could have taken Douglas in his prime, and the answer is always no. Flair should stay in retirement because the sport belongs to Shane. Clips of Shane beating Tully. We get there. He wants to take Tully down and teach him respect for not shaking Shane's hand. Shane beat the respect into him. For all the critics that said he was a mid-level dynamic dude or Steamboat's partner and needed to hide behind Sherry or Mr. Hughes, he's proven them wrong for 18 months. He's done what no man has ever done, going on a trek from the level of franchise and wrestling. Now Marty Jannetty is doing the same in the Southeast that Shane did 18 months ago. He's winning regional titles. He's rebuilding his career. And that puts him as a problem at center stage. Douglas is going to knock him off his pedestal before it becomes an issue and prove that those regional titles don't mean half as what ECW's title means. Marty has tried to set his life right and do what Shane has done, but Shane's a spotlight hog, a media freak, and addicted to gold, and Marty will find out why he won't give up his title without a fight. He'll break his neck or leg and send him back to Florida or Georgia as a franchise wannabe licking his wounds, just like Simmons, Sabu, Funk, Flair, and Hogan would do if they had the guts. On Saturday, Marty finds out why their paths split, and Shane is where he is, while Marty's where he's at. And that was it. And that was something. I thought it was a really well-done promo because he told a story and it made sense. He threaded in his career in ECW, his past beyond that, why he feels the way he does. It all made sense. It also ate up a lot of time on a throwaway show.
But 30 minutes.
And it was delusional. It was a long promo. And it was delusional at times. But he's confident and he believes all of it. And that's what makes him the top heel here. that he you know, obviously truly believes what he's saying about these guys and where he is in comparison to them. So I enjoyed it. It was something different. It was very unique for what they roll out here. And as far as showcasing your top guy and why you think he's your top guy, like, this gets the job done. Johnny, what'd you think of this before Jenny goes off?
Yeah, obviously the length is going to be, of course, of dissension, but I'm on your side. It didn't bother me, and they interspersed his career highlights, so they made a move along. It wasn't as tedious as you'd think for 30 minutes. And also, it's an excellent point how, even though, you know, Shane, it's bullshit, but he believes it. Like, you know, comparing himself to Ali and Gretzky and Bruno and all these, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, you know, Shane Douglas. It's kind of ridiculous, but he puts it across that he believes it. And you know, and after all, it is wrestling. That's what you got to do. It's entertainment, sports entertainment. So you got to shovel it, and some people are going to buy it.
And he is that here, though. He is the guy in EC. I mean, he's their Bruno at this point, right? I mean, he's their guy.
Yeah. The small fish in the big fish in a small pond, yeah.
I guess you weren't listening, because it's not sports entertainment, Johnny.
God.
He's an athlete. He is a serious athlete, like all the others that he named. And then all the others that he named that he's better than, they're also entertainers and not wrestlers. So it was all over the place. And I get it, like I've always said, I'm not going to go off on this. Y'all know how I feel about this, but it's just more of the same bullcrap, and it's fine. Like, it was entertaining enough because he speaks well. Like, he can hold your attention while he's telling you this nonsense, and I'm fine. I'm there for that. I really enjoyed the flashback to that first dust up with him and Funk after at the press conference. Like, that was I got wispy, you know, watching that. And
the old piece of crap. That's my favorite.
Well, it reminds you too that he's been such a mainstay force for us while doing this journey. Like, he's been there since we started it. He has not left, and he's been the champion pretty much the whole time. So he's been our guy since we started watching this. It's been an interesting year the way he's done it.
It is interesting. And he has very pretty blue eyes, so that wasn't bad to look at either. And it's just, I still am unconvinced. So it's as much as he believes it, that's great. I think his job is to get me to believe it, and he has yet to do that.
Okay.
So it's fine if he wants to believe it, but
You're supposed to hate him, and we don't have to have the same conversation we have all the time. But
I know.
You don't have to believe it. You have to believe that he believes it and think he's fucking stupid for it. Like, which I think you kind of do. So I think you know, if you think he's crazy for saying what he says, but he's, you know, this is what makes him. And if you're believing that's what he believes, then he's getting his job done. I think.
You got to give him credit. There's not too many guys that could have pulled off the "they could all kiss my ass," you know, that infamous promo. That's a legendary moment, and not too many guys could have pulled it off like he did.
You're right.
And even this 30 minute, you know, I'm sure it wasn't in one take, obviously, but he does a really good job. Like, knowing ECW, this wasn't scripted. You know what I mean? So he did this, like, I'm sure on his own. So they did a really nice job threading it all the way through his career and taking us through the last year, which in a way was very fitting for our podcast here. Like, he kind of did our 1 year tribute anniversary.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. Cause that line was crossed. Our first TV was 2/8. So it was before that. So, you know, we're pretty much a year in, probably to the day almost. And he recapped it for us, at least his year, for where we're at. So,
well, it's like he makes all these points, and then he, like, his actions are an exact, like, counterpoint to that. Like, bussing on Ric Flair, and then
Dick Flair, right.
and then he emulates Dick Flair, like bringing the chicks to the nightclub, like we saw, and just being a dick. Like,
well, because he wants to be. His whole point is, like, I'm the new Ric Flair. Like, I'm better than Flair. Flair should be put out to pasture, and he won't give me the torch. I could have been Flair for WCW. Like, I should be there. He wouldn't get out of my way, so I left. Like, that's That's his whole thing. But, so he's not shitting on the idea of Flair. He's shitting on the man himself not getting the fuck out of the way.
It's when he starts making the comparisons between entertainment and, like, sport that all that kind of dissipates for me, because which one are you going to choose? Are you going to be like Flair? Are you going to be this champion like Flair and do the things that Ric Flair does as an entertainer, and then you diss him for being an entertainer and saying that he's not an athlete?
Like, I mean, I guess the best way I could say it is,
well, it's convoluted.
You know, he's supposed to be. He's an arrogant douchebag heel. Like, that's what dicks do. Like, right? Like, he's shitting on it, but he's doing the same fucking thing, right? I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we've come to our official...
Yes.
You're on that side. I'm on this side of this one. And, uh-huh. You know, Chad can pound the table and D'Amato can hopefully ride the line and we're all good. All right, Joey runs out the card for Saturday's show at the arena. It's been confirmed. Public Enemy will be in the house. Tommy Dreamer versus Stevie Richards. We see that whole match from Double Tables. Joey then pays a very sad tribute to the passing of Eddie Gilbert, a former ECW standout. We get a montage of Gilbert clips. Of course, he was one of the co-founders of ECW, along with Todd Gordon. Left in, I think it was September 93. That's when ECW really started to turn the corner as a promotion. And not in a bad way, just that's when they started making a lot of their changes. And then he hung around for a while, did some shoot interview stuff, died of a heart attack in February 18th in Puerto Rico. His father believes injuries to his chest and heart muscle occurred in a serious car crash. That could have been a factor. He also used painkillers. That could have played a role as well. And, you know, it was sad. I can't say, like, I knew a lot of A. Gilbert by the time he had passed away, given where I was as a wrestling fan, but... obviously, it meant a lot to ECW, so it was good that they gave him a quick montage here. Mm-hmm. We then get clips of last week's Paul Orion 911 segment. Joey says Loria vows it'll never happen again, and on Saturday night, he will show us why. We then get clips of the closing madness from Double Tables. Chris Benoit is there. He says the talk is done, the hype is played. Paul claims they're an unbeatable team, but he and Dean disagree. If Sabu and Taz win, they'll know they're the best in the world, but when Benoit and Dean win, everyone will know they are the best. Sabu and Taz are going down. Paul's then backstage. He says he wouldn't want to be a Benoit or Malenko because Sabu and Taz want revenge. Forget the titles. They should focus on survival. They'll be better off ordering Super Brawl and expecting to get their money's worth, which is a great fucking dig at WCW. They could have a menage a trois with Magic Johnson or ride a subway with Colin Ferguson. Public Enemy is welcome to Benoit and Malenko when they finish. They don't need the hype because the match speaks for itself. On Saturday, it's settled. And then we also get Cactus Jack against Sandman's representatives. We get clips of Jack giving Sandman the concussion. Jack says that concussion put, Joey says the concussion puts him on the 21-day disabled list by the Athletic Commission. And we get the Sandman interview from last week, and Joey gives us the hard sell. So all you guys catch up for a minute. Jenny, what did you think of the Benoit and then Paulie stuff?
More of the same from Benoit. Not really that impressive for me, but the threesome with Magic Johnson fucking slayed me, and I was not prepared at all for that comment. But it was great. I mean, he is something else, ain't he? Just having the fucking balls to say shit like that always trips me out. I loved his promo.
Yeah, Benoit's the same old with the hand stuff that we discovered. And Paulie, yeah, they only gave him like a minute, but in that minute, he got in his all his 90s references real quick with the magic. And even gave a shout out to Super Brawl. He took a shot at the NWA with the Super Brawl.
Yeah, that was funny. Like, especially since it is kind of a shaky show, which makes it funnier. And then the menage a trois, Magic Johnson as well. All right, so again, I give a couple things. I give Douglas the best moment. Most 90s.
30 moments.
Most 90s, I would chain striped button down with the brown suspenders. That was, I don't know if that's even 90s. That might be more like 20s. I'm not sure, but it was quite the look.
I'm going to go with Paulie with the magic and the Colin Ferguson.
Yeah.
93 incident. Yeah.
Stock rising, I just want to chain and no falling in this one. And I went 5.5. You know, the match, the stuff they showed from Double Tables wasn't as high level. And the Shane, it's going to depend on how you feel about the Shane promo. But at best, it's not going to like carry this to a classic show or anything.
No, definitely.
Yeah, just a five.
Yeah, five.
All right. So with all that said, the hype is done. We are now moving on to Return of the Funker, 1995. Hint, hint. Of course, we're basically viewing the home video version of this. The show wasn't named to that when you're going to the arena, obviously. And it's interesting because we usually do get the name of the show, but they kept us saying this weekend or this 225. So they don't name this one because they obviously didn't want to spoil what was to come. But it would be later reckoned as Return of the Funker. And we waste no time. We get right to our opener because, again, we're just on home video.
Five.
And we waste no time with the action as the Pit Bulls take on Chad Austin and Joel Goodhart. We head right to the ring. Pit Bulls are out there ready to fight these poor bastards. Pit Bull number one is a madman right away. Wrecking Austin gets a big pop. He ragdolls him around, crushes him with a crucifix. We get a double suplex on the Pit Bulls, and then Pit Bull 2 press slams him to the corner where Goodhart tags in and gets destroyed by a clothesline as soon as he comes in. Joey says Jason is working on contracts for Dean Malenko. That's why he's not here. Pitbull 1 puts Goodhart on the top rope, shoves him to the floor. Jason says that the Pitbulls have been reborn, and they get more. Joey says the Pitbulls have been reborn, and they get more vicious after getting chokeslammed by 911. They ended the run of the Young Dragons at our last show. And then Pitbull 1 drills Goodhart with a slingshot shoulder block. Pitbull 2 gets a tag, and they finish Goodhart with a nasty super bomb. This is a fun squash. The crowd loved it. It was good rehab for the Pit Bulls since the choke slam. They're working the back up the guard. Austin and Goodhart, kudos to them because they took a wonderful ass kicking here. Really, really laid it out. And I went 2 stars, Jenny.
Just a correction there. I think Hack Myers ended the run of the Young Dragons last time.
True. They're crediting the Pit Bulls, though, because they beat the shit out of them during the match to get them to that point.
This is, you know, it depends on how you feel about Pit Bulls, I think. But I gave it 1 star. It was what it was. The crowd did like it. So they just got their shit in and murdered these guys. 1 star.
I liked it. It was a nice 2 star. It reminded me of like a Road Warriors TBS NWA squash. There and Goodhart, and I need you guys to answer the picture was a little dicey there. Was that a back tattoo or is that just a hairy back?
I wondered that too.
Oh my god!
I think it's hairy.
Thinking along the, yeah, it was probably hair. Yeah.
Given that he's a jobber in Philadelphia in 1995, I'm gonna say he's probably hairy back more than a tat. That's my guess.
Solid squash.
Oh well, wait now, it might be a tat. Yeah, because I don't think hair grows in that shape. Yeah, it is a tat. It's like an outline. It's not colored in yet. Okay, sorry.
All right, Joey Styles at ringside brings out Raven and Stevie Richards. Joey reminds Raven that Richards lost to Tommy Dreamer. Raven says Richards has failed again, let him down like in the past. He rambles a bit, says he'll get his due. Richards just keeps nodding as he rambles, which is funny. Tommy comes out, gets a Raven's face, says Raven should shut up. They can settle their issues here tonight. Raven says it's not the time or the place, but Tommy needs to let his rage go. He should go ahead and do it and help fuel Raven's pain. Tommy just keeps saying shut up and then walks away. Raven says, Tommy, we'll realize that you can never escape the past. Stevie stumbles through some explanation about losing to Tommy, playing air guitar at some South Philly club, where he found 2 big guys to kick Tommy's butt and run him out of wrestling. He brings them out, and it's our old friends, Tony Stetson and Johnny Hotbody, the yes. Broad Street Bullies, making their return to a fun pop. The Bullies say they're here to do what Stevie couldn't. Raven is a product of society, and they're here to serve Raven and take out Tommy. Raven is what Gen X and society is all about, and he can count on them. Raven slides in the ring, but Tommy comes out and takes out Stevie and the Bullies with a stop sign. As Raven just stands in the corner, takes his jacket off but never moves. Dreamer keeps fighting off the crew, grabs Raven by the throat and hair, but Raven just stands there, doesn't react. And finally, they back Tommy to the corner. Raven sprints over and slams into the mall. Tommy and Raven scrap in the ring until a crew breaks them up. They spill outside. They're really going at it until they get pushed to the back. And I like this. I thought it was really good stuff to continue this mysterious feud and the angle with this backstory we're not aware of yet. And even though the crowd chants are boring through some of this, I get it. Like, they're standing there listening to this talking. But once the Bullies came out, they woke up. And it was a cool little throwback to see them get a little nod here.
I love how the crowd pops for their own. They reacted like it was like Demolition of the Road Warriors. Like, oh, Stetson and Hot Body. All right.
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, I reacted that way.
Fucking Philly's loyal today.
I was so happy to see them back. And with that, I think it's Johnny's beard looking good. And he says, forget this boy, talking about Stevie Richards, which I thought was funny as well. And Raven looks like a stone cold badass, don't he? Just not even backing down and doing his thing.
Well, he represents all of Gen X. All of it. That's what society's like these days. Just a slacker. No, it's a good angle. I like the mystery behind it. We're getting a little more every time. But we're also getting some contact. So they're not like really slow burning it. But they're slow burning why this is happening. We know they have some issue with each other. And we're trying to figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Sorry. I gave you the beat. Go ahead. What's up?
No, Raven's psychology is excellent, where he hesitates to fight back and he's all passive, and then he explodes. Mm. So just real good psychology. Hit it.
The favorite loser of Jennifer Smith, Mikey Whipwreck, is upon us with Hack Myers by his side to take on his old friend Paul Lauria and the sexiest man alive, Jason. So Mikey ambles out with Hack, Jason and Lauria already in the ring. Jason just towers over Lauria, which is pretty funny to see. And he's also ripped and super tan. And I like the spin on this feud by putting them into a tag. So we start with a big four-way brawl that Mikey and Hack dominate. Hack uses Mikey as a weapon to clean house. Mikey pulls Lauria up during a cover, which is a nice twist because that's always happened to him in the past, where guys would yank him up, and he's doing it now. Mikey buries a dropkick, and the Shaw comes in and unloads. Mikey gets a side headlock that sends both men to the floor. Mikey works on Lauria back inside, tags in Hack, who unloads, including a low blow. Mikey comes back, but Jason and Lauria turn the tide and double team and quick tag to keep Mikey grounded. Lauria snaps off a backbreaker, and he and Jason sit on the middle rope, and Jason drops him on Mikey with a leg drop, and that follows with a splash. They continue to work the back and now do a double team where Jason front suplexes Lauria onto Mikey for two. Lauria pitches Mikey outside where Jason smacks him with a frying pan, crotches him on the top rope before kicking him into the ring. The beating continues as Jason press slams Lauria onto Mikey for two, and then Lauria twists him into a bow and arrow. Jason hits a low, very low standing dropkick. And then hit some sort of running inverted razor's edge that didn't really work very well. I'm not sure what he was going for there. Jason whiffs on an elbow drop, and Mikey plays possum as Jason poses. Jason goes up top. Lauria tries to warn him, but as Jason keeps going, the fans egg him on, which was cool. Mikey pops up and crotches him, tries for a superplex, but Jason blocks it and hits him to the mat. Hack comes in and knocks Jason over the top, but Jason recovers and slings Mikey to the floor. Mikey comes back but misses a missile dropkick. Lauria gets a tag and charges, but Mikey dodges him and makes a tag himself. Shaw cleans house to a fired-up crowd, wiping out both men. Mikey joins him and then heads up top and hits a bulldog on Lauria for two, with Jason making the save. We then get a flurry of covers as they keep getting broken up. Mikey and Jason brawl outside as some guy in a mask and a hoodie come in and slug Myers and drag Lauria on top for the win. Very solid tag match with a long heat segment on Mikey. Jason is really awkward out there, but he works his ass off. He's trying. And a nice rub for Hack, who gets elevated a lot lately and looks like a player in there with Mikey. Good finish, too, to keep it rolling with some legs. Azzle intrigue with the mask guy. I went 2 3/4, Jenny.
I love this team up, Mikey and Hack. And I love how they do their tandem moves and the way that Hack throws Mikey around as a weapon. It's awesome. And Mikey is so confident and just fired up, and he's really enjoying being good at this for a little bit. You know what I mean? Even though he does get a pretty good ass whooping, he does give a good ass whooping as well. And also, we saw asses in this match. Both the ass cheeks.
Did you enjoy Lauria, the ass cheeks?
They were nice. And it was full cheek. There was no crack. It was like full cheek, but it was just very impressive the way they timed it for the whole deal, you know. I there was a lot of issues as far as watching this because there were some tracking problems, like you couldn't see some of the match, which was highly annoying. I didn't super love the ending, but I guess it makes sense. I hate for Jason to win anything, and I especially hate for Loria to win anything, but I did give it 2.5 stars, Johnny.
Yeah, I like Mikey has to he has to transfer from underdog to being more confident, but he's not losing the crowd. He's still got the crowd behind him, even
They
as
love him.
his confidence grows. And also Hack, what an unorthodox popular baby face now. Where he does that reverse atomic drop into a groin kick and then spits on Jason. You can't get any more heelish than that, but the crowd loves him. Only in ECW where he'll be like a top baby face with his moves like that. And and the masked slob, whoever he is, jumping Hack, that kind of took the match down a little.
Yeah.
I don't think it was really needed, but otherwise, 2.5 stars.
Especially
that's a new show, I think, The Masked Slob.
Well, especially in these Corona times, you know, seeing him spit on him was a little rough to watch. Not a huge fan of that. All right, let's move on. Our next match is a dandy on paper. It's Too Cold Scorpio takes on Hector Guerrero. Hector in the house. Scorpio, and this one should be fun. We get a little back and forth stalemate as we get going. Guerrero briefly works the leg and starts to focus on the neck with a chin lock and a neck snap. Scorpio comes back with a head scissor, sends Hector flying to the floor. Hector returns and grabs the arm and twists into an ab stretch, but Scorpio blocks a pump handle. Hector powers into a backbreaker for two, gets back to work on the arm, leveraging a hammerlock. They spill outside as Hector has the hammerlock and rams Scorpio into the post, gets an assist from a fan. Hector mares Scorpio on the floor and covers and demands the ref to count him, which was kind of odd. I don't know if that's a thing where he's from. But Scorpio takes over, now really batters the arm, twerking it around. They continue to trade offense on the mat. Hector whiffs on a splash. Scorpio lands a stiff kick and follows with a super kick for two. Scorpio hits a powerbomb for two, but Hector comes roaring back with uppercuts. Scorpio fights him off and comes up empty on a moonsault. Hector gets two on a roll-up. He comes at Scorp, but Scorp catches him with a hot shot and knee drop. Scorpio heads up top, hits a Scorpio splash, and gets the hard-fought win. Quality, hard-hitting win for Scorpio. Rock solid with a nice blend of mat wrestling, limb work, aerial spots. And it really felt like another, you know, could have had another 10 minutes in them, but they go home here. And it was very, very good. Scorpio, as ECW gatekeeper against these guys, is a cool role for him, especially with some of the dudes we've seen him fight and some to come. So I went 3.25 stars, John.
Yeah. I like this nice hold count to hold style, but unfortunately the Philly fucktard fans they weren't too into this. I think they just wanted all blood all night, so they weren't behind it. They kind of crapped on this, but and also I like that out of nowhere where Guerrero turned it in this into like a Three Stooges short where he poked the ref in the eyes and then he friggin' gouges Scorpio's nose and shit, and even Joey says, "Oh, it's like it turned into a Stooges nightmare." I don't know where that came from. With all the technical and the mat based stuff, Guerrero just pulled that out of nowhere. But and nice, nice and quick, and it moved along. Good finish.
Call me a Philly fuckface then, because I did not enjoy this as much as you guys did.
Philly fucktard, yeah.
Whatever, yeah. I like fuckface better. It was fine. Like I found it sort of boring and slow. I like Too Cold, and it was all right. I just it felt cold and technical and
too cold.
Not yeah, too cold and I'm fine. I like mat wrestling, but it's just I don't
Jenny
know.
Jenny wants that blood and horror like a freak.
Yeah,
driver.
Yeah. You know, it was a long
clothes.
Day, and so the finish was okay. I'm glad Too Cold won, but I just gave it 2 stars.
So if we were the Three Stooges, who would we be?
Oh, come on. There's like, we know about 40 of them. Come on.
Well, I meant the three of us, but okay. We all know who Shemp is. That's our mental.
You're definitely Mo. You're definitely Mo. The friggin' bully that clunks their heads together. I guess I'm curly.
Yeah, you're curly. Jenny's Larry.
I guess that leaves Larry for me.
Yeah, you got that hair, Jenny.
Oh, yeah, I got the hair. There you
Our mento's definitely a Shemp, that's for sure. That's... I'll tell you, the Three Stooges, that was a fun Nintendo game for the original NES.
Really?
Yeah, my cousin had it. You had to do, like, they're trying to save, like, some orphanage. That was the game. You had to, like, compete a bunch of tasks. But some of the games they made you play to, like, win were pretty fun. I don't know. It was, like, a good time-killing game. It wasn't winning any awards or anything. But
Comparing AA to Shemp, that's a little rough. Cause,
for who?
When you turn on the Stooges at the beginning, you see it's not a Curly episode. You see Shemp up there. You kind of change the channel.
Exactly. So who's Curly Moe? Isn't that the other one? Is that the third
one? Curly Joe. Oh, that horrific.
Curly Joe.
There was Joe and then Curly Joe. They were both horrible.
Stooges
Shemp
endure.
Wasn't too bad. Shemp wasn't too bad.
I mean, I remember growing up, like, they were still a pretty big thing, Three Stooges. At least, like, it was on TV still pretty regularly. Channel 38 out of Boston had them on a lot.
Was it New Year's they would do the marathon? An episode.
No?
It's more a guy thing, but
when did they do the marathon, John? Was that New Year's Eve for them? I know the honeymoon was New Year's Eve, but
I'm not sure which channel, but yeah, I think AMC or one of them does. Maybe not AMC anymore, but yeah, they definitely still have them, sure, on New Year's Eve.
That's just, but even like in the '80s, like that was like a must, like on one of those holidays. I forget which one. They were there. Obviously, they hold up some of the movies and stuff. All right, let's get to our next match. Speaking of Three Stooges, it's not too far off before we get here. As Ian Rotten battles his brother Axel Rotten again. Ian charges to the ring, attacks a ring attendant who was handed the barbed wire bat and a pole, and he takes it from him. Axel comes in with a chair, and here we go. Ian swings the bat, Axel blocks it, and they head to the floor. Axel ducks, Ian smacks the post with the bat. Axel grabs it, starts to beat on him. Drags it across his head, slicing the back of his skull open. Axel keeps bashing him with the chair at some right hands. Back inside, Ian takes over. Now he drags the bat across Axel's face. He hammers him with it for two. Things spill back outside into the crowd where Axel hits him with a chair. The back of Ian's head is just pouring blood now. So is his eye. Ugh. Joey says, if you want family entertainment, watch the WWF. If you want extreme, you watch this. Ian slugs back into it, spikes Axel to a table. Ian grabs the bat and smashes it across Axel's knee, and then it gets stuck in his leg in a gross spot.
Ugh.
Ian drags it across his head again, puts the bat in the corner, but Axel reverses a whip, and Ian goes crashing into it. Axel chokes Ian with the bat, drags it across his arm. Axel keeps choking and smashing Ian with the bat, but only gets two. Outside, Axel uses a cookie sheet as Joey takes a big shit on WCW. Uncensored, 1995, Jenny. I don't know how you felt about this one. Joey, not a fan. They fight into the crowd, where Axel slams Ian on the metal bleacher, drops an elbow on him. Ian is somehow still standing, as Elton John would say, as they lumber back to the ring. Axel smashes him in the chest with the bat, then drags it across his head again. Ian comes back with a pile driver, as blood is soaking both of them and the ring. Ian grabs the bat, gets to work, puts it on Axel's gut, splashes him off the middle rope. Axel comes back and hits a pancake on Ian onto the bat for the win. And then Ian, as usual, takes out Axel after the bell. Disgusting bloodbath. Gory. The barbed wire that the Clara would love. Johnny, this is the match they wanted. You said they wanted blood. They got it here. Disgusting blood loss. Some of it was a little repetitive, but they certainly made the gimmick count. They did not pussyfoot around this gimmick. Not sure where it goes, but they just continue to beat the shit out of each other. And it feels like they live in their own bubble within ECW. Like, they're not involved in anything else. They literally just there to maim each other on these shows. And that's it. So the Rotten family explodes further into a bloody, gory mess on the show. And Jenny went 3.5 stars.
Pussyfoot, huh? Mm. Yep, no pussyfooting here. This is awesome. This is what I wanted to see. Finally. I love barbed wire on a bat. That's hot. When it stuck in his leg, I was like, okay, here we go. Like, even when he, like, scraped it on the back of his head and he was bleeding, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fine. That leg thing was gross and amazing. And he let it sit there for a minute, too. I was like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Sawing his face off, sawing his arm, hitting him with a baking sheet, suplexing him on the bleachers in the crowd. Just fucking chaos, nonsense. 3.5 stars. Goodness, Johnny.
Two bloody gross stars. And Joey was especially a star in this one, where he said, you get your money's worth when you buy a ticket for ECW. You may lose your seat, but you get your money's worth when they lose a chair. And then he says, and then he stole a classic Jesse Ventura. He said, win if you can, lose if you must, but always bleed.
Put it on my tombstone.
And crap it all over Uncensored.
Yes, there's more to come.
Any chance he gets. Yeah, any chance he gets, he does.
It's like a shot ready, you, Jenny, for all the trash you talk about Shane Douglas.
Hey, I'm used to, you know, shots mm-hmm. about Uncensored 95. I'm bulletproof when it comes to that show. Okay. So, didn't hurt my feelings.
As long as you like it.
That's what I say.
All right, we'll see if you're bulletproof from our ECW champion, as he is here to take on the rocker Mari Jannetty, former tag partners in WWF 1990, as we've been talking about on the Place to Be podcast. Shane was filling in for Shawn Michaels during that time. And now here we go. Shane continues to battle outside contenders to keep up his franchise persona, gatekeep the world title. Marty has his classic rocker tights on. He gets booed pretty good. Shane grabs the mic, talks about their time together as a team, the WWF, and being friends. And Shane says he doesn't want to fight, just wants to have a great wrestling match. Interesting that Shane rarely main events these cards lately, guys. Have you thought about that
yes.
in the show?
Is it because he does not wrestle well? Maybe.
Or he's just working the old Hogan gimmick, middle of the show.
Probably, I mean, because that's all he does is, like, you know, emulate other wrestlers that he will never be as good as. So.
I actually think part of it and is likely because they don't really have him in a feud. Like, he's just kind of taking these monthly challengers on right now, and mm-hmm. and some of the other stuff is more of a heated feuds with the tag stuff going on. Johnny, what do you think? You think that's the reason?
Yeah, you hit it right on the head because they're just bringing guys in for 1 month runs here. Nothing continuous.
Not even a month from Marty. It's a night. So.
Yeah.
All right, Shane offers a handshake. We get a quick flurry of offense and near falls. Douglas eventually bails after the hot open. Shane returns. Marty rolls him up for two. Shane dodges a super kick, bails out. Shane returns again. Marty works the arm, gets two for a power slam. Marty goes up top. Marty goes to a chin lock, but Shane fights out and slugs away until Marty cuts him down. It's a running fist drop. It goes back to the chin lock. Marty releases, goes for a super kick, but Shane dodges it. It's a low blow to send Marty to the floor in pain. Marty gets to the apron, snaps Shane's neck across the top, flips in and clotheslines Shane to the floor. Marty shoots Shane over the guardrail and into the fans. They brawl through the fans toward the back, but we can't keep track of them in the masses. They end up back at ringside where Douglas suplexes Marty across the railing. Shane gets to work on the ribs in the ring, working aggressively. Shane grabs a bear hug as Joey rattles off all the guys he's defeated. Shane hits a clothesline. We get the Marty 360 sell. Marty rolls out. Shane meets him with a boot to the face, shoots him to the railing. Marty comes roaring back, and Shane throws him hard into the post. Shane backdrops Marty on an open chair, which was a kind of a nasty spot. Shane whiffs on a chair swing, eats a super kick. Marty lands a second one. We go back inside where we ebb and flow with strikes until Douglas posts himself. Marty goes right in on the shoulder, in and out of the ring as the fans are now cheering him on, which is cool. They've completely turned. Back inside, Marty hits a rocker dropper. That's a good near fall. Then he hits a great super kick. Heads up top as Shane rolls away. Marty hops down. Marty lands a DDT for another close near fall. Marty tries for a Frankensteiner, but Shane blocks it with a powerbomb for the win. And I thought this was a great gem. A lot of back and forth, nonstop pace and focus work. They brought the mat game. They brought the focus limb work. They brawled a lot. We got some sick spots. And it was really good defense for Shane. Really good defense as well. And Marty showed up big time and won the crowd over. I thought this was a great match. Jenny, you've been talking about, you know, Shane not having great matches. In your eyes, I thought this was a great match. I know Marty can go. Obviously, he was one of my top 100 WWF wrestlers of all time. I think he's a great worker. And I thought Shane hung with him. And we got to see what Shane could do with someone that could really go, someone younger, someone that's not like in his 50s out there. So it was nice to see him really get a shot like this and be able to work a quicker style match. I went 4 stars. I really like this.
4 stars?
Four.
You said four.
Four. Said four like stars. The Four Horsemen right. and Dick Flair.
All right. Well, I mean, okay. I gave it 3 stars. And
you're a loser.
Marty looks like an impoverished bumblebee trying to pollinate some young flowers over here in this outfit. And other than that, they did have pretty good chemistry. It was a little bit slow in the beginning. I enjoyed the We Want Sean chants that just quickly turned into the crowd loving him. So nice little unexpected turn from them. And I really liked the body drop on the chair that Shane did do. And the snappy super kicks and the DDT on Shane was pretty sick as well. The ending was all right. It felt a little Shane, formulaic Shane win. So I think that took a little bit out of it for me. So I gave it the old 3-star. Good try, Shane. You all right?
I'm going to split the difference, 3.5. It was very surprising, but well, not totally surprising, because we all know that, like, Marty, for once a month, he could really go out there and bring it. Mm-hmm. He was great. Very surprising. You know, the once a month that he's not on some type of substance, or he's not chasing the Duff sisters or the Muff sisters or whatever.
The Rosatis.
When he had his head screwed on, right, he could go. And I love this continuous action, both inside and out. No long BS wrestles. They got right to the point. And Marty dominated, and he kind of won the crowd over, because they were a little tepid at first, but mm-hmm. he won them over. And then Shane pulled it out. But real nice, a nice surprise, a little hidden gem here.
To me, that's like the sign of such a great match. He was hated and disinterested when he came out, and had them mm-hmm. cheering him by the end. Not just the match, right. They were cheering him.
Yeah, won the crowd over.
Yeah, it was so good. I really like this. It was a cool match to watch. I wasn't expecting that much, even though it's Marty. Because you kind of have nights where Marty's off, right, John, like you're saying. But when he's on, he's one of the best. So that was a great match, and it was a defense Shane needed. I mean, he had the fun stuff with Simmons too, but this was one to show where he could really work. Out comes Johnny Grunge wheeling out Rocco Rock in a wheelchair to talk to Joey Styles. Rock says, "You may not go to jail or get caught, but you pay the price and end up in a chair." Last time he ended up in a chair, he was 16. Grunge says he usually do the robbing and tells Paul to take Sabu and Taz, pat them on the back, because they're the champs and they're coming for the belts to take them back to the hood. Rock's public enemy is ECW, and that Gordon and Paul are in cahoots to prevent them from representing ECW, but it's theirs. Benoit and Malenko did this to Public Enemy, but Public Enemy are the real crippler and shooter. And out come Benoit and Malenko. They do not look happy. They attack and overwhelm Grunge. Malenko wheels Rock into Benoit, who cuts him down, knocks him out of the chair with a hard club. They load him back in the chair and then send him flying into the railing. Grunge beats up Dean in the ring until Benoit comes out and just destroys him with a chair. And out come Sabu and Taz charge out and brawl Malenko and Benoit to get us to our match. But before we get to the match, Johnny, what did you think of this brawling segment?
The only thing was so gross that when Rocco's side exploded, I don't know. It looked like it. I don't even know. It didn't even look like blood, because it looked kind of like brown, like he had a colostomy bag or something.
It wouldn't shock me if they worked shirt. In like a colostomy bag into the angle.
Yeah, his white shirt looked like brown. It didn't really look bloody. So yeah, that was a gross spot. I don't know if they were hurt legit or.
I mean, he sold it like he was. You know, he kept looking at his hand and like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And I like that nobody robs a Public Enemy. Public Enemy does the robbing.
This was fun. I love it ringside. I love Joey ringside. That took some getting used to, I think, for me. But the more that they do it, the more I like it. And I like how he just dips out when all the chaos starts.
It was good. I can watch guys in wheelchairs or stretchers get thrown around all day. It's my favorite stuff.
Spoken like a bully.
Real nice. Great Malenko. Great Malenko. Great Malenko. Who's the bully now? It's not me. It's Dean fucking Malenko. And this match is immediately underway. All four brawling wildly, tossing bombs at each other as Public Enemy hobble off. Lots of heavy strikes and hate flowing through. Taz throws Dean to the floor. Follows out as Benoit chops away on Sabu. They end up back inside. We get some big suplexes and near falls. Sabu gets shoved outside, and Benoit and Malenko double-team Taz as the crowd tries to rally him. Sabu rolls back in. Malenko crushes him with 2 brainbusters as they start to focus on that busted neck. Taz snaps over with a belly-to-belly, and then another one to both guys. Malenko punts him down. Taz breaks out of a full Nelson with an inverted suplex and catches Benoit on the top. Stun guns him on the top rope and then hits a disgusting German suplex. Taz clears out Malenko and the crowd is fucking going crazy. Taz hoists up Malenko on his shoulders, but Benoit clips him from behind. They shove Sabu back outside and Malenko hooks an ankle lock with a leg lace while Benoit keeps Sabu at bay. Taz's ankle is a mess as he gets knocked to the floor and he can't get up, so Paul has to have 911 carry him to the back to protect him. Benoit and Malenko pick apart Sabu, but he keeps battling and knocks them both to the floor, hits double planches. Sabu follows with a springboard moonsault that wipes out Benoit and the guardrail. Sabu heads back in. Paul gives him a chair. He flies into both men with a crossbody off the top, sets up the chair. It's a springboard moonsault into both men as he's just emptying his tank. The crowd is rabid for Sabu. He sets up an open table across the top rope. Malenko heads back in, but Sabu slams him, sets an open chair on the table. Sabu climbs up, but Benoit shoves him off and just takes a nasty spill onto the chair as they both fall. Benoit heads up and powerbombs Sabu off the table on top as Paul decks Dean with the phone. Benoit covers and gets the win and the tag team titles. Public Enemy come back out as Grunge takes out the champions. 911 carries Taz back to the ring and just drops him in there. And then all six men start to brawl. 911 press slams Taz and throws him into the new champions and Public Enemy on the floor. Sabu follows with a dive off the top, and then 911 destroys the ref with a choke slam as the other six brawl to the back in just a great chaotic scene. Really wild brawl with pure chaos and big bombs. All four guys made to look amazing. Sabu and Taz getting mauled, never saying die. Malenko and Benoit successfully putting down the animals, and that's a big showing for them. And it's a really good title switch. It's a great brawl moment, post-match, all of it together. 3 3/4, Johnny.
Yeah, the Benoit powerbomb. That was just terrific how they pulled that off. But at the end, just mad chaos. And with 911 carrying crippled Taz, and then Grunge carrying a crippled Rocco, it's just a big mess. These guys, Rocco's in a wheelchair, and now all of a sudden Grunge is carrying him out there to try to save the day. Just total carnage.
These four guys, all of them are like highly dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, they are built up so well that to me, I was kind of scared for all of them. Like, I see what Taz can do in a fucking suplex. I seen what Benoit can do to Sabu. Sabu is a fucking crazy person. And Malenko is just so deadly and quick. So it's this combination of people is, you don't know what the fuck is going to happen in this match. And that's exactly what they give you, just this great spots after great spots. They're all just like sharp and fast. And it's just barrels toward that giant brawl at the end. I love this match. I gave it 3 3/4 as well. Great stuff.
And cool new champs in Benoit and Malenko, who deserve it.
Yes.
Because they've been awesome. Joey welcomes out the Sandman and Woman, and they have a box with them where their replacement is waiting. Woman says Jack has been running his mouth and tried to take out her meal ticket, but now it's time for the mystery partner. She isn't some Philly floozy that rides shirt tails. She wants Jack out here. Jack complies, heads to the ring to a pop, and the box opens to be DC Drake. Not very imposing. Drake has sweatpants and paint and Anthony Armento's hairline, and that is certainly certainly a look by DC Drake, who is a basically just a guy that's made his way around the indie circuit, all the territories, worked in Continental, worked for the NWF, worked for Tri-State and Eastern Championship Wrestling. He was there for a little bit, and this is pretty much it for him. I think maybe here and there he pops in and out, but he retired in 95. So, you know, whatever. He's just a guy. You'd always see him in like PWI and those other magazines. He'd be like in the random top tens of various territory promotions. But what'd you think of the reveal, Jenny, of DC Drake?
Yeah, my note says, who the fuck is this? So it was not all that impressive to me.
Nope. Did you expect, I mean, obviously, I guess based on the name of the show, you expected more here, like to come still. I would imagine in the moment for a lot of these fans, I wonder if they also expected more or thought this was really just it.
I don't know. That's a good question. I really don't know. I knew it wasn't going to be Terry Funk coming out of the fucking thing, though. But, yeah, it was just all right. Not great.
Yeah, I mean, besides what happens at the end, the obvious comes out. But you figure they could at least found a bit of stand-in, a bit of mid-card with a name or something. But I guess Paulie used up all his favors and couldn't pull nobody out to come to Philly in February.
Yeah, but I think it was meant to be like a downer moment to set up for what's to come.
Because eventually what happens at the end is really great.
Yeah, like you couldn't have a name here and then another name. So,
but yeah, at least a mid Carter. I mean, come on, man. Not a, you know, who the fuck that, you know, that nobody knows. So.
Yeah.
They all hit the Drake.
I'm sure somebody got fired from from one of the big companies that they could have dragged out there.
Bring back Matt Bourne, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, seems like everyone here hates the Drake. Drake didn't exactly fire up the fans. Joey says, Drake is one of those vicious wrestlers in Pennsylvania. Jack works the arm, lands a headbutt, but Drake fires back and bites him. Sandman tries to nail Cactus with a cane from ringside as Jack is hammering away. Cactus chokes away. We head outside where he smacks him with a frying pan. In the ring, Drake comes back by using the timekeeper hammer, but Jack shrugs that off and tosses him outside again. They battle back and forth until Jack nails him in the head with a stop sign. Back inside, Jack hits a double arm DDT for the win. Nothing here, just a simplistic brawl to further the story. Drake is not inspiring at all. He's the opposite of inspiring. I went one star. Either of you have anything you want to say about that before we move on?
Nope. Yeah, Joey had one good line where he says, Drake looks like he hasn't seen the sun or a bed in 3 weeks.
It was funny.
Which is also double A-like.
As it comes out of the box. All right.
Rough night. Rough night for Dooley.
All right. Sandman attacks right at the bell, cracks Jack in the head with the cane. Jack comes back with a bulldog. He chokes away. Woman makes a save. Jack grabs Woman and chokes her, but Sandman makes a save with the cane. Drake holds Jack as Sandman batters him. Jack fights him off with a DDT and drops Drake and then knocks Sandman outside with a Cactus clothesline. At ringside, Jack shoves Sandman into the box. And we should note here that Sandman is wearing American flag Zubiz pants. So that's the look he's got going on. So he's in the box, and then he pulls him out, but there's a draped sheet over him that was inside the box. So out comes Sandman. We see the pants. He's got the sheet over him. Joey takes a shot of those American flag pants as Jack hammers away. Jack grabs the cane. He yanks off the sheet, and it is not Sandman. It is Terry Funk. Underneath to a massive pop and a great moment. Funk slaps Jack and they start to brawl. The crowd is chanting for Terry. Sandman comes in and batters Jack with the cane as Funk slugs away, which is just a great visual as Funk and Sandman have the same outfit, the red shirt, the red, white, and blue pants, and the white sneakers. The locker room empties a bit, but the guys get cleared out. Jack battles back. He bashes Funk in the head with the cane over and over. Funk just no-sells it, and Sandman nails Kane from behind. Nails him with the cane from behind. Funk and Sandman batter Jack with more cane shots to the back of the head, viciously attacking anyone who tries to help. Tommy Dreamer comes out. He beats up Sandman with the cane, but then he pauses when he sees his old idol, Terry Funk. Dreamer drops the cane, and Funk slaps him, says, "Hit me." Sandman decks Dreamer with the cane as Funk grabs a mic and says he doesn't care about anyone anymore, calls Cactus Jack a pig. The beatdown continues with chairs and canes as Shane Douglas comes out, but he's hesitant to get involved. Joey reminds us that Shane is friends with Cactus Jack, as we heard last week. Jack watches Jack get attacked. Woman and Funk try to get him to help, but he stands and watches the beating. Woman tries to explain that she managed the Four Horsemen and that Douglas should join them to elevate the triple threat and meet up and link them all together. Douglas has a smile. He's digging the horseman idea as a shot at Ric Flair. Joey says Woman could have the most powerful group in history, but Sandman holds up Jack as Funk shoves Douglas to fire him up. Douglas gets the belt, turns, and nails Sandman and Funk to a big pop, saving his old friend, Cactus Jack, cleaning out the ring. And I thought this was a tremendous angle. The execution was flawless in the reveal. This is something that could have been hokey, but they really nailed it with it not being obvious that it was Funk. And again, don't forget, no one else would have known the name of the show. So this was a true surprise in the moment. We got kind of spoiled because we knew the name, but the crowd loved it. Funk is back in ECW where he belongs in a very unique role now as a heel, it seems. Felt like pure chaos and destruction. Douglas's face turn is big too. And we now have a massive seat change atop ECW and a big time show. Just a really massive show across the board. John, what did you think of the whole post-match kerfuffle?
Funk and Sandman in matching Stars and Stripes pants. I mean, what's more American than that? And the only thing that the box, random box at ringside was a little wonky, but I guess that was the best I could come up with to set this up. But once Funk came out, it was just beautiful. The crowd went crazy, and then Funk calling the fans pigs He tells Cactus he hasn't forgotten Japan. Just beautiful. And I like how Shane sticks to his guns, that they're not gonna go and have factions like the Four Horsemen. He's gonna still kind of stay independent. So.
Damn, poor Cactus took a fucking beating. which is what he does. And I, of course, did not believe at all that Shane would, you know, would do anything with with Terry Funk. So it was good. Like, it's a really good way to end this show, because I feel like the show was kind of up and down a lot, and this goes a long way towards it's a big moment, and we needed a big moment. That's what I mean.
And it was, and it really resets, just like a year before, how we reset the main event scene with the mm-hmm. night the line was crossed. We do it again here, where we realign. Now it seems like we're going to have Shane Douglas, Tommy Dreamer, and Cactus Jack atop the promotion in a face role. We're going to have Terry Funk and Sandman as your top heels. So we're really aligned. We have our tag division is aligned with Benoit Malenko as champions. You know, Scorpio still on the mid-card with the TV. So everything is really lined up nicely for the promotion here. All right, let's get to our awards to wrap things up. Best match for me was Shane Douglas and Marty Jannetty.
Shane and Marty.
Taboo. That's our new name. Taboo and Benoit Malenko. Always.
All right, worst match, I went with a Cactus and DC Drake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Best moment was easily Funk's reveal and return.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or a Shane saving Cactus.
Yep, that was good too. Really, the whole post match for that.
All of that.
All right, most 90s, I have a bunch. The photographer at ringside had a long sleeve, thick striped polo, which is very like a 90s and early 2000s look of the long sleeve polo with the stripes. DC Drake was a very 90s looking wrestler. Jack Choking Woman was extremely wrestling in the 90s. And Sandman and Funk's American Flag Zubas.
Got to go with the pants. Yeah, the stars and stripes. Sure. Got to go with the stars and stripes.
Mm. All right, Stock Rising, I went Raven, Dreamer, Hackmeyer, Scorpio, Jannetty, Douglas, Benoit, Malenko. All had great nights.
Yeah, Benoit and Malenko especially. And Shane.
Yeah, I'm giving it to the Rottens.
There you go. Oh. Stock Falling, I just went Austin and Goodhart and DC Drake.
Hate the Drake.
All right, final grade. I thought this was an awesome show. Like, DC Drake and Cactus was the worst match. It was supposed to be not much, and it was quick. So fine, whatever there. But I thought there were a lot of big angles. We reset the promotion. The main event had a great moment, and then the big match was in the undercard with Jannetty and Douglas and the tag. And I have this even with double tables for me with an 8.5 out of 10 for an ECW Super Show.
Well, I was lower on the Too Cold match, but I did like the Rottens. And then everything post-Rottens was really good. So I'm going to do an 8 out of 10.
Okay, I'm going to be the low man. 7.5, very respectable.
Mm-hmm. So. Great show, once again. Yeah. All right, so that'll do it for us. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the fallout from this show and the setup for our next big show. So we'll have 6 weeks of TV to get through on our next episode of Extreme Three-Way Dance. Be sure to check out each and every day right here on the North South Connection Wrestling Podcast feed. We have shows really dropping 5 days a week, or at least 5 days a week out of the seven. Mondays with Aaron George, you either get the year that was or from Montreal to Memphis. Tuesdays, you get your dose into O2. With the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast with Jake Williams, where he's looking at the Ruthless Aggression era, or with TNA Never Dies, Jenny, with me, you, and Aaron George, working our way through the NWA TNA era that we kicked off a week ago. Wednesdays, you get Chad Campbell. You either get his Fighting Spirit of 06 or Carolina Dreamin' podcast. It was a quick hit, great listens. Thursday, we take you back to the 90s. You either get this show here, or you get Wrestling Warzone with me and Chad going through the Monday Night Wars. We're into early 96. Get about to get to WrestleMania 12 on our next episode. And on Saturdays, it's a clusterfuck Saturday. So you either get No Holds Barred, which is always kind of a mess, or Jeff Learns Wrestling, equally as chaotic. So, like I said, there's a ton of shows for you. They all have focus. They're all usually pretty quick to listen to. They're focused on specific topics that all thread together across the feed. And we appreciate everyone that's listened so far. We would really appreciate if you subscribe and leave us some feedback or a rating on any podcast or apps that you use. on social media or facebook.com/NorthSouthConnection. Twitter is at JTThePodGuy. You can follow me there for updates on this feed as well as our daily Twitter tournaments that we have going on as well. Johnny, anything else you want to mention?
No, just continue with some random appearances on all three holes there. At JADICE7 on my Twitter. Thanks.
Jenny?
All three holes filled. All right. I have a podcast feed. It is called The Jenny Position. I talk about all kinds of stuff over there, including there's an episode of Freak Out Drive-In with Sean Kidd. We watched Pet Sematary, so that was really fun. I have a new show over there called You Heard About Pluto? And that is an experimental podcast that involves me and a guest watching an episode of Pluto TV, like one of the hundreds of channels of old shows that they have on Pluto. My guest picks one, and then we watched it. So me and Nate Milton watched an episode of American Gladiators. That was, I thought, very interesting and fun to do with him. So I'll probably end up doing more American Gladiators in that show, but we'll also be doing things like Mystery Science Theater 3000 and whatever else that I can come up with to watch on Pluto. You can follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position, and the Facebook page is Jenny Position as well.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Stay extreme, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.